Time to talk a little hockey goaltending edition with Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Mr. Woodley, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I almost couldn't answer the first time. I had a near fish fatality in the home office here. You know, it's probably a sign you need to change the fish water when they're literally jumping out of the top of it and trying to basically end it on their own.
Yeah. Let me out. Get me out of here. No, well, unless they're fighting, right? You got any of those fighting fish in there?
No, but he was fighting once he hit the desk. Let me tell you that. There's a lot of flopping. I've had salmon that put up less of a fight after they land on the boat than this one put up on the front of the desk.
But did you save him, though? Did you save the fish?
I did save him, yes. There was a reason you guys had to call back, but he is safe. We've salvaged it. It was worth a life.
Well, that is good.
Make that call again.
Because as a child, losing your fish the first time, it's not good. Not good. Then you'd have to do the whole funeral over the toilet, and it can be a very... It can last a lot longer.
This fish tank didn't start in my office. It started in a kid's room. There were more than one of those funerals, and then they eventually lose interest, and you end up having to take care of it. That's how life works.
Very true. Now, the Washington Capitals, convincing win in Game 5, and do you think the Caps have picked up any tendencies in Murray's game that they exploited in Game 5?
There's no question that they've picked up tendencies. I think it would probably actually be naive to think they didn't pick up on them sooner. Over the course of this job over the years, I've gotten to know which coaches really break down other guys better than others, and Mitch Korn is among one of the best in terms of really isolating strengths and weaknesses of an opposing goaltender. Now, just because you break it down doesn't mean your team executes on it. And even when you identify areas of weakness, it doesn't mean that the other team's going to give you an opportunity to exploit them. There's also the fact that not everyone in your room always listens to those scouting reports. You always got guys in the room that pay close attention and guys in the room that are just going to shoot where they want to shoot no matter what. So I think that some of these tendencies were there. But what you can see happen over the course of a series is as they pay off, other guys start to pay attention. And I do wonder if that's starting to happen a little bit. In this series, we've seen the sort of the paddle down on the blocker side on the post, cost him the Beagle goal. Pretty quick, tough play. Hard to say that I know that was in their pre-scout. Hard to say that that's what Beagle was doing at that point because it's a pretty, almost a lucky chip play that goes over the shoulder. But there have been other points in the series where some guys have tried to pick that spot and just missed because it was there. The other one with Matt Murray that is, was identifiable to me in the pre-scout and has become even more evident is high glove. And let's be honest, high glove is you put it by a goalie's ear, as Ovechkin did early in this series, it's probably going in no matter what goalie we're talking about. But in Murray's case, there is a tendency, when you go frame by frame and slow down the video on almost all of his saves, you will see a difference in the way the two sides drop. When he goes into a butterfly or into a save execution, his default is for the left side to drop before the right side, and so that's the glove side.
Okay.
Starts with the knees. You watch for it on Tuesday night. You'll see this in his save execution, especially if you slow it down. The left side goes down before the right, so that you think of the knee going down first. It carries through the shoulders. It carries through the hands. And so that's glove side for him. And I think that's why you've seen the Penguins actually change Murray's glove position since the start of the year. He used to hold it in what I call a handshake position. So sort of more neutral at the waist with the hands kind of forward, like you're reaching out with your left hand to shake someone's hand. And now when he goes into save execution, you'll see him lift it up to a fingers up position where he's holding that glove higher on his shoulder. And to me, that's a defense mechanism away from the fact that he gives up the glove side more than he does the blocker side. He stays on blocker side shots as well as anyone, honestly, in the NHL. The way he kind of tracks down and keeps that blocker elbow up, and we saw him make that save on Richards in this series that way on a tough shot that looked like it was labeled. But on the glove side, it drops first. So that's a tendency that it has at times in this series looked like they're trying to target. It succeeded at times. And I would expect them to keep going after it because, if I'm spotting it, they're spotting it. And it was pretty obvious, has been throughout the season. And it's there. Like I said, you slow it down, especially and go frame by frame, and you can see the difference in terms of the two sides for him. It also manifests itself in the way he moves. He is better left to right compared to right to left. So moving to his glove He is not as efficient in those movements. The problem with that is Capitals' power play always runs off the right wall up to Ovechkin on the other side, and that actually kind of feeds into Matt Murray's strength. So it'll be interesting to see if they start to give even different looks there as well.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine join us. So now Fleury's on the bench. Let's say the Capitals win game six, and maybe they score on some of the things you just mentioned, right? See him favoring the glove side to the blocker side potentially. Do you think there's any way they would make that change for game seven, or would that be kind of foolish to go to Fleury having him not play in the entire series?
That's a tough ask. I mean, that's a tough ask for a guy who hasn't played. I think you can mimic games to a certain extent in practice, and obviously their goalie coach would have a better feel for how Marc-Andre is reacting to those situations, and you know, frankly, whether he is reacting to those situations or is he just getting in position and blocking. And you know, that sort of block-react dynamic is something that you can't really mimic game situations, but you can do your best to present them and as a goalie coach kind of read how you think he's reacting. So they'll have a better read on it. But, boy, that's a really big ask. And I guess to me it would have to be like Matt Murray – not doing the same thing. So if these are tendencies of Matt Murray's and some of them get exploited, hey, listen, that's the way he's always played. He's gotten you to this point doing the same things, and he's got a .937 save percentage. He's not the problem. If you see them exploited and he starts to cheat away from them or take more ice because if you can see that he feels like he doesn't trust that glove and all of a sudden he's coming out and being more aggressive than he needs to be or than he traditionally is, and he's coming outside of the game he plays, and he doesn't look like himself, that's when you've got to maybe consider making that decision. If Matt Murray stays within himself and he just gets beat, I don't know that I make that change. But if you see him starting to chase the game because he's not trusting what's gotten him to this point, that's where I'd consider going to Marc-Andre Fleury.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine at NHL.com. Joins us. Now, Kevin, from a goaltending perspective, it's interesting to know that Detroit now, did they not have the same goalie coach for like 18 years?
Yeah, Jim Bedard has been there for 18 years and through a lot of good times with whether it's Osgood or Hasek's there. And obviously news breaking today that he's been told he won't be back. And so that was a bit of a surprise just because of the tenure. Because of not a surprising that they changed head coaches, and that's often when you see a new guy, you know, after a year for Jeff Blash, he'll bring in his own coach maybe. But just, you know, I mean, Jim Bedard's been there, like he's a staple as much as Ken Holland is a staple. And you talk to the goalies that work with him, and they like working with him. So it's interesting that that's a change, but one of many, right? We've seen Ottawa with Rick Walmsley. You see Vancouver with Roland Melanson moving on, and I fully expect Dan Cloutier to move up, and nothing official there, but expect him to move up and take that spot. We've talked about other openings. I wouldn't be surprised if there are changes in Minnesota. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a change, not by the team, but you know, I've heard different things about whether we see a change in Anaheim, just based on Dwayne Rolison maybe not wanting to stay in that role as it's currently structured. I mean, it sounds like there's going to be a lot of goalie coaching jobs and a lot of moving chairs this summer. And Bedard is one that, you know, I think surprised people.
So, now he's a guy who I'm guessing then would be highly sought after from other teams?
The role's changed. Okay. Again, I like Jim Bedard. I've heard nothing but good things. He preaches a little bit of a different philosophy. You see his goalies play a more aggressive style. When you watch them practice, there's a lot more sort of gliding and flow to their game and not the sort of start, stop, start, stop. You can almost hear it when they're on the ice, that kind of that hard cut of the skate and then that stop. It makes a different sound, most goalies, compared to Bedard goalies when they practice. And I've seen a lot of value in that with his guys. But the role's changing. You know, some of the guys that have been around a longer time, they don't do as much of this pre-scout stuff that I was just talking about in terms of breaking down Matt Murray to that degree. Some are involved at different levels with scouting. And I think you're seeing more and more demands on the job, and that role changing. They want you involved in scouting. They want you to be spending hours, not just breaking down your own goaltenders and helping them getting better, but literally hours and hours of videotape breaking down the other goaltenders and helping come up with a plan of attack to break them down. So, you know, I can't say. I think a lot of times relationships still play a role in some of these hiring processes. And the truth is, a lot of the people that do the hiring for a goalie coach haven't got a friggin' clue what they're trying to hire for because they don't know the position. I mean, in some cases, admittedly, they make decisions on a position and a job that they don't fully understand. So I'm not willing to say highly sought after. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. I mean, you know, same with Rick Walmsley in Ottawa. I'm not sure what the overall opinions. Did some good things, but you heard different things about, you know, whether the coaching and the teaching was up to date, whether this other work was being done to the level it's being done with other teams. So it's really tough to say because I can't get into the mind of general managers. Frankly, it's really tough to say because so many organizations Mickey Mouse the job top to bottom. I mean, there are – you can tell me that goaltending is the most important position on the ice, Jason, and I can point to a half dozen NHL teams that spend less top to bottom on their goaltending development and their goaltending coaches than other teams spend on their AHL goalie coach alone. There are NHL goalie coaches making significantly less than AHL goalie coaches with other franchises. Not saying one's right and one's wrong, but the level of commitment to the position is vastly different from one organization to the next. And I don't think it's a coincidence. In a lot of cases, the organizations where there isn't as big a commitment are the ones where they quite often end up buying somebody else's free agent or making acquisitions as opposed to bringing guys up and developing them on their own.
Kevin Woodley joined us. Now, that's interesting. Now, when you look at that numbers, are the teams that are spending more money on a goalie coach in the NHL and AHL compared to a team who's, you know, NHL goalie coaches making as much as the AHL, is there a significant difference in the success from goaltenders in those organizations?
It's not always the case, but yeah, for the most part, yes. I mean, at the end of the day, their talent's going to play a role. But top to bottom, yeah, I think if you were to do an overview and find a way to sort of assess and evaluate what success is and find numbers that measure it, yeah, because off the top of my head, looking at the lack of success for some of those organizations and knowing what they commit to it to other places, there's a reason that Vancouver basically sort of develops goalies that end up in other places. Like they manufacture goalies and use them as assets. The Los Angeles Kings, Billy Ranford at the top, Kim Dillabaugh in the American Hockey League. Dillabaugh goes to, you know, goes to Philly as their new goalie coach. They bring in Dusty Emu as the new AHL goalie coach. All the success he had in Winnipeg, he was the guy who played a big role in Hellebuck and Eric Comrie. So, yeah, when I look at organizations like Winnipeg when they had Emu, like L.A. when they had Dillabaugh and now bringing in Emu, there's L.A. seeing the true value of their American Hockey League goalie coach is that they created assets like Ben Scrivens, like Martin Jones, like Jonathan Bernier, that they could then move on and use for other pieces or, you know, for a period of time for themselves. And so when they lose a Kim Dillabaugh, they go out and actively hire a Dusty Emu who's had success. And they do it and they attract the best because they put resources into that position. It's not treated as an afterthought. It's a major part of their organization, and it's treated as such. And so you see them continually have success and continue to develop goaltenders. And I think organizations like that are kind of the model that others should strive for, yet a lot of other teams aren't willing, frankly, to put the resources in to do it. It's not going to happen without them.
And lastly, what about the goaltending coach in Vancouver? What are you hearing?
Well, there's nothing official, but as I said, that's a job that's vacant with Melanson moving on, and I'm pretty sure it sounds like it'll be Dan Cloutier taking his place. That seems to be the buzz among the goalie coaching community, though. Again, for sure, nothing's confirmed. Don't be surprised if that's the way things shake out.
Kev, always good to talk to you, man. I'll be watching Murray now after listening to that breakdown to see some of the little tidbits. I love it. You describe it very well. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Monday.
My pleasure. Talk to you then.